But first question I'd like to ask is, what brings you to Seattle?
Well, probably the most important thing that brings me to Seattle is the fact that my daughter, Julie Marie, was killed in the Murrah Building bombing in Oklahoma City on April the 19th, 1995. And the first 6 months after the bombing, had I known that McVeigh and Nichols were guilty, I would have been ready for their execution, because I was filled with vengeance and hate, rage, all the adjectives you can think of. And after a period of time, I got to thinking and asking myself the question, what would their execution really do for me? How would it help me? How would it help me selfishly for myself? Would I feel better? No, I determined I wouldn't. I know it wouldn't bring Julie back. So where really am I benefited as a family member of a victim? And we hear so many times about prosecution talking about the victim's families or the victims get no justice. And like the death penalty is going to provide some kind of a justice or some type of healing for me. And it just simply doesn't. And I would much rather see those two guys remain in prison the rest of their life. Hopefully someday go to talking and explain to us why they did it, how they ever came up with enough vengeance and hate of their own, because vengeance and hate is what caused that bombing. Their strong anti-government feelings, and in many ways being supported in kind of a small way by a lot of our hate radio that we have in this country. It kind of keeps the drum rolling for the anti-government people. And I think that maybe if they would just come forward and say, we did it, and if they would ask for forgiveness, it would sure help me a lot. That'd be the most important thing to me at this stage of my life.
You had said that it was about 6 months after the bombing that you had a change of heart on this. Was there a single incident or anything specific which prompted you to have that change?
No, it was probably becoming a little bit tired of hearing politicians in Oklahoma and really across the country talk about the upcoming trials of them and how the death penalty was going to be the cure-all. And I think reality just finally struck me that what the politicians are talking about doesn't provide healing. You know, our criminal justice system shouldn't cross over into politics, but unfortunately it does. So many of our district attorneys, for example, in this country are elected. They're elected offices. And we currently have the Oklahoma County District Attorney that's going to try McVeigh and Nichols again in state court. And we've almost been 3 years now before any of us really have had an opportunity to try to get some stability back in our lives. And now we're going to spend probably another 2 or 3 years with the state trials. And I'm very tired. I want to try to get back to some peace in my life. And as long as politicians keep stirring it up, it's making it difficult, not only for me, for everyone. And there are a lot of people in central Oklahoma that have been devastated. High rates of divorce among family members, among survivors, rescue workers, police officers. I think the count now is 4 suicides that have stemmed from this. That's mainly among police officers and rescue workers. And I think the longer we try to grip this vengeance path that we're on, the more devastating it becomes.
Were you involved with death penalty, working against the death penalty prior to this whole incident? Had it been something that had been at the forefront of your efforts and activities?
No, I had never worked on any issue pro or con the death penalty. I've always been opposed to the death penalty. I guess because my mother and father were opposed to it, although it was not a huge issue with them. Maybe I can blame my Catholicism. That's easy a lot of times for we Catholics to do that. But the Sisters of Mercy taught me in elementary school that executions were wrong. The Benedictine priests taught me that in high school, that they were wrong. And so it was probably just my upbringing, my teaching. But I had never really been tested. I think it's quite easy for someone to say, I oppose the death penalty, when they've never experienced a family member or a close friend or anyone that has been killed by a criminal through a violent act. And by the same token, I think it's very easy for people to rah-rah and shake their fist and say, I'm for the death penalty, and especially in a lot of the politicians, and get all the votes that they can possibly get, when maybe truly in their heart they really don't philosophically believe in it. But yet they'll talk out of both sides of the mouth to get votes, because it plays very well right now. And I want people to continue the debate. And I want those that are opposed to the death penalty to ask themselves, why am I opposed to it? Really, really think about it hard. And those that support the death penalty, I want them to do the same thing. And ask themselves, does vengeance and hate really pay? I think Oklahoma City tells us that it doesn't pay.
So you sound like there might be a little bit of... I don't know if insincerity is correct, but both sides obviously need to do some thinking on that, and perhaps weigh in a little more than we already are. I mean, yeah, it seems like it gets a little short shift on, comes up under the political realm, you know, something, one of the boxes you check when you're voting for someone, but until you actually experience it, then you really don't know what you're talking about to a degree.
Yeah, and I really would like to see maybe a poll taken, a survey taken, kind of an in-depth survey of family members of victims of crimes, that after the perpetrator had been executed for 1 year, to go to that family member and say, okay, how do you feel today, 1 year after the execution of the convicted? How did it help your life over the last year? How did it improve your feelings? Do you feel better today? Do you feel worse? Or are you carrying some guilt? And I think that society would be really surprised as to what that answer might be, because I've had a number of telephone calls from people that, in that very situation, that have told me the grief that they've suffered after the perpetrator had been executed. Because while the perpetrator was still alive, they had somebody to shake their fist at. On days that they felt vengeance and hate themselves, they had somebody to say, I hate that person. But once that person is dead, it's a little bit hard to shake your fist at them, even if they're in prison. It's a little bit hard to shake your fist at them and say how much you hate them for that. And I still have moments of that, of where I have enough hate in my heart that it's probably sinful, but I'm only human.
How have others, family members who lost people in Oklahoma City, how have they reacted to your current stance? Have you found support amongst others, or have they... taking a negative tone with your current stance?
Well, early on, I had only one or two family members that said, you know, I agree with you, that's how I feel. And I had other family members that would approach me, not angry, but say, how can you feel that way after what they did? And since that time, I've had, especially over the last 6 months, I've had quite a number of calls from family members that have said, you know, I've been thinking about what you said and what you've been saying about the death penalty and how it's going to help my life and help me feel better. And I think you're right. I think I agree with what you've been saying. And I've had more and more people that have really given us some deep thought. And that's what I want, is people to think about. I want them to debate the issue. Something is so critical in our society as this, we can't drop the debate on it. And the old thing, an eye for an eye, you know, Gandhi put it very well when he said, an eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind. And I think that we need to continue to discuss it, ask the politicians to be honest, if that's possible, and I think it is, and give us facts and figures also, because some people are concerned about the financial aspects of the death penalty. And so far, everything that I've found shows that any death penalty cases cost many times more than it costs to keep a man in prison for life. We had a case in Oklahoma, Roger Dale Stafford, who was on death row for 14 years. He was the one that was involved in the sirloin stockade murders there, where six people had been murdered. At the time, the worst crime of its kind in the nation. And his 14 years on death row and all of his appeals, he was finally executed. He ended up costing the state of Oklahoma over $17 million. You can house a lot of prisoners for life for $17 million. And did his crime deserve the death penalty? If anyone did, his did. But did it help those family members? I don't think so. I've heard a couple of them speak about it, not publicly, but make comments that it really didn't change anything in their life. So I think it's more for the non-connected than it is the connected. It's supposed to be a feel-good. And killing a human being, I don't get a feel-good from.
What's your thoughts on the... currently we're looking at, I believe, the state of Texas just had a record number of executions. I see in the newspaper, for instance, a few weeks back, and I can't actually remember which state or who was being executed, but they had a photo of about 30 police officers clapping as they heard of this person who had, I believe, shot and killed a police officer, clapping as they heard that he was being executed. What are your thoughts on our current state of affairs when images like this are being projected across the country?
Well, you know, we have mob violence in this country sometimes. And I think that was just a real sign of mob justice. I think those police officers felt like that they had to do that. They had to perform. I think that they felt their superiors, their elected officials, expected that from them. And that's part of what the truth that I'm talking about is, people being really honest. And how someone could applaud the death of anyone, actually applaud that, I'll not understand. I would have to say that those police officers that did that, I don't think that I want them protecting my community, because they sound awfully violent to me, if they truly believe that way.
Tell me about your daughter Julie and your and her thoughts on the death penalty.
Well, my family, none of us are involved in politics, but we love to get a heated debate going about politics and discuss it, argue about it, Most of the time we agree on things, but sometimes we don't. But I remember one time when I was taking Julie back to school in Milwaukee at Marquette University. I was driving, and she was, I thought, asleep. We were on Interstate 80 between Omaha and Des Moines. And I had flipped the radio station over to WBBM radio station in Chicago, which is a 24-hour news station. And when I get up closer to the Chicago area and I can pick it up, I like to listen to it when I'm driving, even though it's repeat, repeat, repeat. And they had got through telling a story on the news about this execution that had happened in Texas that morning. And I thought Julie was asleep, and about 2 or 3 minutes after the news is over, I think they were talking about sports or weather, she didn't even look at me. She just still had her head kind of tilted over in the corner of the car, and she said, Dad, that makes me sick. Said it stronger than what I just did. And I thought, oh, goodness, what did I say to her yesterday or an hour ago to stir her up that she's now thinking about? And I thought she was asleep. Well, what she was talking about, that the news had made her sick, and she said that is an absolute bloodbath going on in Texas. And she said all they're doing is teaching their little children to hate. The Texas officials are stooping to the level of the criminal when they're doing that. And it has no redeeming social value. And that's a quote from her very directly. And I thought it was very strong for a 20-year-old kid.
What's your views on the media's role in the current shape of people's opinions in this country, specifically to the death penalty, when you've got your average child, by the time they're through with school, seeing, I think I just read it yesterday, 8,000 murders on TV and, you know, 100,000 acts of violence and such. Do you think that's helping to send us into the downward spiral that we're seeing now?
I really think it's beyond that. Because if we try to blame the violence that's on television, and believe me, there's plenty of violence on television, then why do we have such a high percentage of children that come out of watching those years of television in LA elementary school and high school and even college that do so well? It's a lot bigger percentage than those that do bad. So just to blame it on the violence on television, I don't think is the answer. I think the answer is more at the grassroots of where that child lives. What is there for that child to do? What kind of activities are there that child to do on the block they live on? That's where we have to catch these kids. Because, you know, the overwhelming number of children that watch that crap on TV come out fine. It's only a small percentage that don't. And I think that comes right from the neighborhood.
Also, give me a comparison here. The United States is, I believe, one of the few Western countries that still has the death penalty. The bulk of our trading partners have all abolished it. What are your views on that?
Oh, I think maybe it speaks a little bit toward maybe we're not quite as civilized as we like to believe that we are. And I think the fact that all of Western Europe, none of them have the death penalty, and our crime rate is many times what theirs is. The city of Oklahoma City has a city population of about 500,000 people in the corporate limits, with a metropolitan area of about 1.2 million. And where Julie went to school in Madrid had less murders per year than Oklahoma City has. And Oklahoma City is not a high, as America goes, it's not a high-ranked city for murders. We only murder about 70 or 80 a year. That's good grades. That's sad to have to say that you murder 70 or 80 people a year in your community, and that's good. But Madrid doesn't murder that many. And it's many times the size of Oklahoma City. And that's true if you go to the countries in Italy, France, Japan, throughout the world. Canada's much better than we are. and they're right next door. So I don't think that the death penalty thing has one thing to do with it. I think Minnesota abolished the death penalty back in the 1890s, and it's among the lowest states in the nation for murder rate. And Texas executes the most, and they keep the lead in the murders. They slaughter them in and out of prison every day there. So I just don't think that the two equate. The healing process is a difficult one to understand, because we're led to believe that through our law enforcement people, our justice system, that if these people are caught, they're tried, they're convicted, they're executed, that's the feel good. And regardless of what their punishment is, there's nothing about their punishment that makes anyone feel good. If they spend the rest of their life in prison, like I hope that they do, I want them there for one reason, and that's to protect society from these people for the rest of their lives, because I think these people are a real threat to society. And the other people that were involved with them that we don't know about yet are also a threat. The real grieving goes on, and the real difficulty goes on among the family members and the survivors after the trials are over and after the hype is gone. Then where do we go from here? What's next? What do we have to, how do we vent? How do we vent our anger? Or how do we get therapy from one another when these trials are over with and we're anticipating the execution? It's almost like limbo. And I've had people that have called me from all over the country. Most recent call probably came from Anaheim, California. And this lady called, and she had told me that she had wanted to call me for a long time, that she had read different articles that I had written and had seen me on TV, and wanted to let me know how badly she had felt the day of the bombing and how she stayed glued to the television set. And she called me and went to crying. And what this lady really was seeking from me was some type of therapy that I could give to her, because she was hurting so bad. And I mentioned earlier about the suicides that we've had connected to the Murrah bombing. We've had a lot of difficulty with people all over the country and the grief that they've gone through. And I think a lot of times people don't recognize that. I recognize it because I get the calls from them. And they're really wanting attention for themselves, and I don't mind doing that. They gave me a lot of attention. They gave me a lot of love and have tried to help me. And they, too, are in pain. But up until this point, they've been afraid to admit that because they didn't think that their pain would be accepted by one of the family members, that they could say, I, too, have that pain. But you don't understand that. But yes, I do understand that. I've talked to enough of those people to know. And I've suggested to a number of them that they get therapy in their local communities, to go to the Red Cross, that they probably can get some help there for those people that can't afford it. And this bombing, the way it happened, affected people all over the globe. I have in my possession cards and letters from 17 foreign countries. The most unique came from a girl in Peru. She didn't know my address. And she wrote the letter to family de Julie Welch, Oklahoma City, USA. And that was put in my mailbox at home. And I thought that was quite impressive, that the Postal Service had gone to all that effort to find out who the family of Julie Welch was. And people have gone to all extremes to try to help, to try to heal, and to try to heal themselves. And we're not receiving that through death penalty sentences, and there's no therapy there. That's all abstract.
Do you feel the coverage of some of the trial and such of Timothy McVeigh and Nichols has perhaps taken on a almost circus-like atmosphere and deviated the energy that could be focusing on healing of victims' families and everyone else in the country, and instead just focused on this revenge that these prosecutors and our system seem to like so much?
Yeah, I think that at times it has been a circus. And part of my life has been a circus. I didn't intend for it to be. But you have this keen interest of people in the national news media that say, you know, we need to talk to this nut in Oklahoma City, this guy that lost his daughter. You know who I'm talking about? The one that says he's against the death penalty? And this is the way it happened at the very beginning. But I don't get that from the news media now. And the reason I don't is because I think that a lot of the people in the media have stopped and thought about their feelings and about maybe there is another way. Maybe this mob justice really isn't the right way to go. And I think many, many times the death penalty becomes mob justice. Case in point, again, the police officers that applauded when the guy was executed. That's sinful.
Let me wrap this up with a last question on how people have been responding. I know you were over at, for instance, Spokane yesterday, and I'm assuming you've been touring outside of just Washington State, but how have people been responding to your talking about what's happened and your feelings, and how has that helped you at all?
Yeah, it really has, because I think that people, the thing that I've found out, it's brought a lot of questions. And people ask me questions that I simply can't answer. I had one ask of me last night about a guy that had been released from prison, and he got an early release. I'm not sure what state it took place in. I don't know if it was a hypothetical or not. I don't think that it was. And a couple of years after he was out of prison, he murdered four more people. And, of course, the question came to me, had he received the death penalty, those four people would be alive today. Well, I have to agree with that. But I want to make sure that we don't ever execute any innocent people if we're going to have the death penalty. And so help me God, back in the early 1900s in this country, we executed many, many innocent people because they didn't have money for their defense, didn't have a defense lawyer. Not a single person on death row in the state of Oklahoma today, right today, paid for their own defense. In the history of the state of Oklahoma, there's never been anyone executed that ever paid for their own defense. In the case of O.J. Simpson, regardless of how that trial came out, they didn't even request the death penalty in that case because the accused had the money to fight it. So it's the rich people don't receive the death penalty, it's only the poor people. And I don't think that only poor people commit capital murder that's punishable by death. I think rich people do it sometimes too. And that's just not justice. And I'm not advocating the rich being executed either.